Why is this happening to me? Why now?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 8, Mission Interpersonal. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Sometimes it's like I hear that clip again for the very first time and how surreal it is to hear her saying our name.
Yeah, Bunting. Yeah.
Anyway, hi.
Hi.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you there is no Again With This episode this week because April has 5 Fridays. But the April Again With Them, speaking of Jenny Garth, this is, of course, our recap of her podcast that she does about 90210 with Tori Spelling called 90210MG. Our episode on the April episodes of that will be dropping Thursday, April 28th. This is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. So if you are not on that tier, get on that tier. You're missing a lot of nonsense.
Yeah. And we watch so you don't have to. I'd feel that that's worth every penny.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to note that Again With This, episode 94, which will be dropping May 6th, is Let's Watch Dean Cain in The Perfect Husband, in which he plays Scott Peterson. It's been a while. I've been waiting to do this one, and now we're going to do it. Reek in a True Crime Joint. That is available on YouTube. We will link it in the show notes. And you can follow our coverage of that and every other episode, almost 100 of them.
My God.
Again with this, on our Patreon page, patreon.com/againwiththis.
Indeed. All right, let's start Mission Interpersonal with our C plot. The Jane, Jake, Allison conflict comes to a head, and Billy and Samantha hit a new snag. Billy is just trying to take out his trash and get to work when Allison and her Gap shorts, which I absolutely had at the time, as soon as she came out in them, I remembered them. She and her shorts are ranting on about the situation with her, Jake, and Jane. Billy finds it weird that Allison is coming to him with this, which it only happens a couple of times a year, but he is right. She says she's that desperate. Again, make some friends who haven't dated anyone you know, please.
Yeah, please.
Billy's trying to stay out of her life in order to avoid getting decked by Jake again, so he asks her not to drag him back in, and Allison agrees, grabbing his arm, but makes sure that if the cops question him about Jane, he'll tell the truth, and he says he will. And at the trash cans, Billy runs into Sam, putting garbage back into a bag. This idiot can't even manage to throw away garbage. Honestly. God. And she is rueing the sight of more trash confronting her in the form of Billy and rejecting his offer for help. He then apologizes for having been shitty to her the night before at Shooters. She was right that he's not ready for a relationship, but wrong about him being hung up on Allison. Sam agrees to be his friend for some reason. Like, truly, what do you think Billy's value is, friend-wise? Honestly.
Yeah. No.
None. In Amanda's office, Craig tells her he got a seat next to hers on the plane to Portland. He can help her work on her pitch and then drive down the coast when they're done and stop at a place he knows to watch the storms roll in. What would be even more spectacular than that, she says, closing her door, is seeing him hanging from his underwear by one of the bluffs, which will happen if he comes anywhere near Portland. Craig thought they were on a new level after their success in San Francisco. She guesses he thought he could get her into bed, but that privilege belongs solely to her husband. And Billy enters just then. While Amanda's gone, she wants the two of them to prepare research for her on, of all things, the country's top 10 packaging companies. And Craig shakes his head like he thinks he and his Wharton degree are too good for this shit, because, you know, Wharton. Later.
LOL.
Craig comes to the complex looking for Billy and knocks on Jane's door first to try to locate him. And after Sam opens the door and directs him, Craig spontaneously asks this. Clip two.
Look, I know that this is out of the blue, but by any chance, would you be free tomorrow night? I've got some tickets to the Gypsy Kings at the Greek. Wait, you're not attached, are you?
Only to the 90s-est references ever.
Thank you.
The Gypsy Kings. Holy shit. This was in seriously 65% of restaurants that you ever went in back then. Mm-hmm. Bumbleleo. Anyway, good luck to them.
Yeah.
I hope they're still with us. And, but like, wow, what a sort of deep cut, so to speak, that mm-hmm. really brings you back to 25 years ago. Like, oh, sure. That. Moby.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It really does. I had the same note, so thank you. Yes. So then Billy opens his door and calls Craig over. Sam still isn't sure about Craig, so he tells her to call him at work the next day, and Billy is like, clip three.
What's going on over there?
John?
I don't know, French-Canadian Billy. What is going on over there?
Oh, over there. Yeah, that's some Philly. That's some Philly. Oh, nothing. We're just going to see the Gritty Kings. Jesus. He's not even trying. Although, when he was trying, there was no improvement. So, I guess I don't blame him.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Smarter, not harder. Good job, right. Billy.
The Andrew Shue story. Later at the store, Jane's serving a customer when Sam sees Jake walking in and hustles the lady into the fits before shit starts popping off. Jake starts by arm grabbing Jane and leading her to the middle of the store. And she makes a snitting remark about how ineffective the restraining order was. But he just tells her where he'll be the next night for dinner if she wants to come and talk. And apparently Sam did end up accepting Craig's invitation, because when we see them next, they're in the courtyard quelling about the Gypsy King show. And she's happy that Craig is so normal, since everyone else she knows has some kind of kinky desperation, but not Craig. And he leans in for a kiss. She gives him a quick peck, agreeing that they'll have to do this again. And he goes straight from her door to Billy's and is like, before you get all pissed off, I brought you a gift, which is a t-shirt from the show. And inside we see that Billy has been doing all the work that Amanda ordered. In fact, as Craig notes, he's almost done. Clip four.
I mean, Amanda's going to be thrilled when she sees all we've done.
First off, you're not taking credit for any of it. I mean, you know how much work we had to do. You decided to go on some stupid date? What the hell is that, Craig?
Well, it sounds a lot like jealousy. I mean, I know you were going out with Samantha a couple of times, but she said it was no big deal. She said you guys were just friends. Anyway, okay. Well, enjoy the t-shirt and all the glory. I'm gonna go and get some sleep.
Billy, do you not understand how nepotism works? He doesn't have to try, so why would he?
Yeah, exactly. I will say that this is some of Charvet's best work yet so far.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, be pissy about it. Don't care. Going mm-hmm. to bed. Like, okay.
And apparently the concert ended before 8, because in the very next scene, Jane is catching up to Jake outside the restaurant. He wants to go inside, but it's such a beautiful night, they should just walk. For some reason, he agrees, and she takes his arm, commenting on what a nice spot it is and wondering why he never brought her there when they were dating. And when they make it to a little dark alcove, she makes it weird. Clip 5.
Jake. I've been dreaming of this moment for so long, you have no idea.
Is that what you think this is? We're gonna get back together?
Well, I just assumed that you finally sorted out your feelings and realized your mistake.
My mistake?
Okay, we both made mistakes.
No, my only mistake was that I didn't have this discussion with you sooner.
What discussion? I don't understand.
I don't love you anymore, Jane. I'm in love with Allison. We didn't plan it. We didn't want to hurt anybody, but... Besides, you've been pushing me away for weeks.
Because I had to resolve things with Richard.
Well, it doesn't matter. My feelings are what they are.
But they're based on a lie. You fell in love with her only because I pushed you away, Jake. If you leave, will you remember how good things were with us?
Jane, stop it. It's not gonna happen. It
has to happen. I won't let you do this to me.
Jane, please, I can't just drop my feelings for Allison.
Stop saying that. Stop lying.
Jane.
Get your hands off me. You ruined my life.
I didn't do anything.
Yes, you did. You took everything away. No, you raped me, Richard. You're a monster. I want you dead. I want you dead. He raped me.
Richard's dead, Jane.
That's not fair. He raped me.
It's okay. over.
You raped me.
It's gonna be okay.
Jake, you are out of your depth.
Where to fucking start with this?
Yeah.
Although she has done some good work in this plot line, this is not that. This is bad acting by Josie Bissette. In her defense, no one who wrote any of this seems to have any understanding of how this trauma would manifest. I understand that it's a soap, but this is like, you know, advanced topics in like post-traumatic hallucination. Like, this is way, I guess I'm glad that they're just wrapping it up so abruptly, which we will get to, but it's like, okay, she has this rant, she has a sort of reality break. Jake comforts her, and then we cut to her being like, well, I told everybody that the restraining order was a big mistake. Bye. And then we're done with this shit. I mean, like, I'm glad we're done with this shit, but this was bad. This was like painful to watch from a craft perspective. And
yeah,
gross,
this is why there are some topics that soaps should not try to tackle, because, you know, whatever drama you get from it is only going to be undercut by your inability to be respectful of what the experience would be.
Yeah.
And this whole plot line has been really a mess. Like, there could have been, there were a lot of ways that Jane could have wanted to get revenge on Richard or kill him short of this. Like, he fucked up her business, you know? Like, maybe that drove her crazy. Who knows, you know? But this is, I agree with you that I'm glad that this seems to be like, well, I've fixed it. I had this breakthrough and now I'm all better.
Yeah. Like, only on TV, but like, TV is the only time that you really need this. Because you're just like, oh my God.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, that is the next scene. Jane didn't want to do the thing she did. She wishes Jake and Allison the best. And Jake seems to think she's sincere. Allison's not so sure it's actually over, but it's over for today. So let's move on.
Yes.
To the B plot. Taylor's whole deal finally revealed while Sydney sniffs around Kyle. We pick back up with Taylor where we left off. Still in the hospital parking lot right after she's told Peter who he is. She's not surprised that he doesn't remember her. She was an ugly duckling when we knew her as a teen. These two actors are officially only 4 years apart age-wise. So if she was a gawky teen of like 15 or something, then he was a doctor at 19, married to her sister. But whatever.
Right. And she would not be unrecognizable. Like, maybe if she was 9. But—
right.
Yeah, this is very soapy and dumb and takes forever to execute.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Well, here's the rest of the backstory. Taylor was at boarding school when Peter was married to Beth. He doesn't get why Taylor has waited months into their time as neighbors to reveal herself. She claims their current proximity is a bizarre coincidence. And when he was cleared in Beth's death, Taylor hoped he would come back to town. And when he didn't, she assumed she would never see him again. They each have a new life now, which is why Taylor thinks they should keep their connection a secret. Years ago, she told Kyle that Peter was the first man she ever loved, and Kyle can be jealous, so she doesn't think they need to get him all riled up. And there's nothing for him to be jealous about anyway, right? But before letting him go, she has one more parting remark, and it is, guess what, creepy, clip six.
It's so good to be close to you again. I'm just so glad that both of our lives have turned out so well. Remember our little secret.
Ugh.
I can't. I've been lulled into a sound sleep by how long all of your scenes seem to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, Jack Wagner is serving me definite, like, knows something's off and wants to leave.
Yes.
Realness, which is not working because this is a soap and his character, like, has to, even if it's not credible, be, like, entertained or at least not creeped out by her, but it's Jack Wagner is not working it as well as he usually does.
Well, it's like it's like character. Josie Bissette with that monologue where it's like, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
And he was better in the last episode when she tells him and he's like, what? Whereas now he's just like, you know, as you said, sort of playing it like he's intrigued and, you know, even though nothing gave us any indication that he still felt any connection to the family, he grieves Beth, but it's not like he's attached to the rest of them. And obviously they aren't to him either, because they didn't try and get in touch and be like, oh, by the way, you were cleared, so you can stop fugitiving or whatever.
Yeah, since he was outed by the cops anyway, I think.
Yeah.
That feels like a gazillion years ago. It was only 7 episodes, but still, like, Wagner is trying to split the difference, but it just ends up being like, he's like, who farted? And it's like, well, the writers. Sorry.
The next morning, Peter's on the phone trying to get extensions on loans for office stuff when Taylor and her pink bikini go past below swimming laps. And Amanda comes out expositing about her Portland work trip, and he needs to remember to deposit the rent checks and deal with the pool guy. She also hands him a new credit card on their first joint account. This just reminds him that Amanda has been paying for everything since he got out of jail. Today, she doesn't care, saying it's their money now. And they part on good terms, and he walks out with her and then heads back inside while Taylor watches him. Guess how? That's right. Creepily.
What?
I know. And then Sydney's in the kitchen at Kyle's, expositing for us that she's been hanging around there a lot. She asks where Taylor is, and he says she's under the weather again. When they were in Boston, he couldn't keep her out of the restaurant, but she's changed since they came to California. And Sydney says something bland about the first few years of marriage being tough, not that she personally ever got that far. And Kyle says he's lucky Taylor's forgiving since he cheated, and we learned for the first time it was with a server. And Sydney comments that temptation's like dandruff. You can't always see it, but it's always there. And he calls her California incarnate, in that she's totally spaced out. But in fact, Taylor's not out under the weather. She is at Peter's door with dinner, since she knew that he was batching it that night. Man, she's the youngest person I've ever heard use that phrase. My grandma used to say that when any of her sons-in-law had to fend for themselves in the kitchen, and she thought they didn't know how, which they did. But
I mean, I say that, so aww, that proves your point.
Okay.
Grandpa Buncey. Yeah.
Taylor also brought Peter and Beth's wedding album, which for some reason she has. And as he flips through it, Taylor is creepy. Clip 7.
What?
Beth was something else, wasn't she? Beautiful. Warm. She was so patient.
I'd forgotten. When I ran away from that life, I ran away from my feelings as well. You know, you can put the past on a shelf and forget about it.
Till some crazy kid sister digs it all up again.
Hello.
Are you naked?
Record scratch.
God bless. Truly. Still feeling Taylor's eyes on him, Peter claims he's just waiting for the pizza guy and tries to keep up his half of the conversation in a PG way, even as Amanda leads it in a phone sexy direction. And Taylor crosses behind him just before Amanda asks what Peter wants to do to her. And awkwardly, he says he'll start at the top. And Taylor lets herself out, but that doesn't make Peter any less inhibited in clip 8.
Then, work my way down to them. What to? The pizza.
What?
My pizza's here. The pizza guy's at the door.
What?
That's what we're calling you now? The pizza? Okay.
Oh, the pizza. And it's Steve Sanders. Wearing very short shorts. Carrying a bag.
Yes, of course, that is Taylor trying to rescue him by, you know, faking someone at the door. So Amanda says it's fine. He can call her back and she'll start without him. And when he hangs up, clip 9.
Idiot. What am I thinking, huh? I just lied to her. I mean, I should have just told her that you just stopped by. I mean, that's all that you did. You just stopped by.
I better go. You should call her back. I made a mess of everything, and that is the last thing I wanted to do. I'm sorry. Good night, Peter.
This So,
creepo.
Yes. Outside the door, she smiles creepily. Also, we see that she took the wedding album with her. Bitch, that's his. It's his wedding, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy forever. The next day, Taylor happens to run into Peter at a mall jewelry store where he's shopping for a diamond ring. Taylor never thought about it, but it's true. Amanda doesn't have an engagement ring. Peter is not happy to see her, with good reason. Clip 10.
Well, I thought I might surprise her when she gets back.
I hope it's not out of guilt over your little fib last night.
Well, actually, it is a little.
I remember the ring you bought Beth. You spent every cent you had on it. Dad thought you'd lost your mind, remember?
You know, I'm going to take a little time and think about this. Thanks a lot.
Oh, wait. Look at this.
Oh, you have excellent taste, ma'am.
I do, don't I?
That's 3.5 carats. It's probably the finest quality diamond I've got.
Again, I'm going to take a little time and think about this.
Sure.
Taylor, you coming?
Yeah.
That's too big.
It's too big. It's not as bad as they usually are, and at least, you know, Jason Priestley isn't playing a German jeweler.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I mean, Taylor's scenes are so awkward and they go on for so much longer than, like, people would just get out of these situations with her because she's creepy and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we're stuck with her for the duration. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's underlying it is that he does still feel guilty about Beth, and this is his, you know, surprise connection to her. So he doesn't want to blow her off out of respect somehow or something. But they're not giving him that to play, really. So it's just like, I'm playing along with this because I don't know what she's going to do. Which, you know.
Yeah. Well,
also fair, I guess.
He was also giving the same. Like, he was totally the same before he knew who she was.
Right.
That she was just like, you know, giving him the Manson lamps, and he'd be like, all right, well, bye. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
No. Anyway.
So outside, he says he knows Taylor means well, and she finishes a sentence, she should butt out, and adds that you never buy your second wife a nicer ring than your first, and then takes off before he can respond.
What?
So Sydney rolls into Kyle's the next day, only to learn from Taylor that its namesake is out. There's going to be a delay on the new painting that he wanted. Taylor does not care. Sydney thinks it's amazing to see the McBrides living and working together. Taylor says it lets her keep an eye on Kyle, and Sydney says she can see how that would be important. And then, off Taylor's sharp look, realizes she probably wasn't supposed to know about, you know, the cheating, and apologizes, babbling on about how great it is to see that Kyle and Taylor then got past the incident, because she couldn't. And Taylor doesn't know why Kyle would have said anything about anything to Sydney, who guesses he was just trying to make a friend, which is when Peter enters behind her and Sydney takes off. And Peter shows Taylor the ring that he bought Amanda, and Sydney watches through the window trying to figure out what she's looking at as Taylor enthuses about the ring, and it's, you know, understandable reaction, like, them?
Yeah, true.
So Peter's watching some kind of a sport at home when Amanda comes home, announces that her trip was a disaster and she left early to get some rest before facing the fields. Peter was not planning to meet her plane. He has a dinner reservation for them at 8, not at Kyle's. And Amanda flops back with a groan, so Peter offers to cancel it, to Amanda's relief. She's about to take a shower when he presents her with the ring, which is fine because he's official aides. She likes it, but clip 11.
How can we ever afford this?
What's a little more debt when you already got a pile of it?
But all you've been doing is worrying about money. Something like this will only make it worse. Besides, I have a great wedding ring. It's enough.
I threw a little caution to the wind, Amanda.
You have to take it back. I insist.
You need a proper ring.
I need to get out from under this burden.
My career problems...
Our career problems. God, Peter, how do you expect me to react? I come home from an exhausting trip and find you in front of the television. Was this shopping excursion the only work you did while I was away? Sorry.
No. No, actually, you're probably right. I should take it back. Right now, actually, while they're still open.
Oh, good. We're here again.
Mm-hmm. She didn't care about this. in this episode, like at the beginning.
Yeah.
Guys, like find some other way, please.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get the point if she's like, well, my money is our money. And then he goes out and spends like five figures of it. I can see that that would be upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't want to have this fight again. I don't want to see it keep happening. It's really getting tiresome.
Yeah, agree.
On to the A-plot. Michael, Kimberly, and Megan's situation gets more complicated, plus Matt, because he didn't really fit anywhere else. First, there's some more sub-music that I don't hate. Sorry, am I going insane? Clip 12.
Baby, I got to find out just what you're all about. And I'm not leaving, no.
You're going insane. That's bad.
I think when it's just not terrible, I get tricked into thinking like, oh, it's better. And it is better, but that doesn't mean it's good.
I mean, I respect that lately, like, it's a little more obviously sub music and it's not trying to fool us, mm-hmm. I guess, but it's still bad.
Yeah. All right. So then it's morning in Megan's sparsely decorated bedroom, or possibly her teenage daughter's, because what is that bone and rose striped quilt you can see in the visual aids? Michael wakes up and mock apologizes for spending the whole night, which he knows is against her rules, but she laughs that the rule actually just prohibits him from staying for breakfast. Clip 13.
What will you tell your wife?
Oh, that was some pathetic lie. You know, patient in need, all night at the hospital, something completely believable that will make me feel like a jerk all day. A happy, smiling, satisfied jerk, of course.
Do you feel guilty? Because we're not really seeing it.
Yeah. And, like, that you acknowledge that your lies are pathetic and transparent is weird for you, but yeah. Okay.
So then a beeper goes off, which he says is going to be Kimberly calling him. But Megan says it's her beeper, actually, and she's late, which kicks Michael back into his desperation to know more about her. Clip 14.
Late? That would mean a job, a place of business, a boss. All right, let me guess. Commodities broker, a real estate agent, something in the entertainment business?
Forget it, Michael. Not in a million years are you finding out.
Oh, come on. It's a logical progression of any affair to eventually get to know one another, isn't it?
Logical is boring.
Well, illogical is worse. Tell me something, Megan. Why are there no clothes in these closets, huh? And no food in the refrigerator? And not a single photograph or personal possession in this whole damn house. I know. You obviously don't live here, Megan. Or is it some other name? Is Megan a lie, too?
Shame on you, Michael. Now you've gone and pissed me off.
Oh, you're pissed off? Wait a sec. I'm talking to you. All right, a one-night stand. No names, but we're connecting now. Look, I can't stop thinking about you, and I'll bet money you can't stop thinking about me.
Michael, please don't do this.
What? Do what? What are you talking about? You talking about maybe being honest? You know, honesty is usually a desirable trait in a man, and quite frankly, hard as hell to find. So please, Megan, are you hearing anything I'm saying?
Goodbye, Michael.
I know this guy isn't ranting on about honesty when he just finished saying that he's lying to his wife badly.
And when he's Michael Mancini.
Honest to God.
And, here's the thing, though. I understand that the show cast Kelly Rutherford and this is what they're doing, but like, she is the most boring fucking actress in the world. Like, only Sarah Wayne Callies is more boring. She is the Joel Kinnaman of actresses.
Mm-hmm.
So that he would be like in her sexual thrall is hilarious to me. Like, yeah. Oh, but fucking oatmeal is your kink? Cool. Like, I'm sure she's a very kind person and nice to animals and all that shit, but who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
This is a guy who has fucked Sydney. Like, end of mm-hmm. conversation. You know?
Yeah.
She is very boring, Kelly Rutherford. Again, no offense. But because I know her first as Serena's mother from the original Gossip Girl, like, mm-hmm. that's all I hear when she talks. Like, she just sounds like an indulgent mother. Mm-hmm. It's like, not sexy. Yeah.
Sure.
No offense to mothers either. As she peels out, Michael tries to memorize her license plate number, even as he allows for the possibility that the car could be stolen. He's just flailing. Over to Kimberly, alone in Dr. Howard Stein's office as she gets the results of her MRI, clip 15.
Now, as you can see, it is a very large mass, roughly 5 centimeters, and the position of the tumor over the right eye is creating the pressure you've been feeling and the headaches. Frankly, it's amazing to me that you haven't experienced any seizures. Kimberly, still with me? The extensive infiltration rules out surgery as an option. The biopsies were positive, so it's already spreading. I won't lie to you, Kimberly, it's as bad as it gets. I can give you maybe 3 months tops. I'd suggest that you get your affairs in order as quickly as possible. Would you like me to tell Michael?
No, I will. I think I just need some time before I tell anyone.
Biopsies?
Biopsies? Wrong syllable there, Howie. Look, I am happy for Marcia Cross that she's getting this off ramp, but man,
like, yeah,
we're trading her for Kelly Rutherford.
Also, how many things can go wrong with this poor woman's brain in the span of one soap opera?
I mean, now we have a definitive number, I assume. Right. I don't remember this period because I was, again, lulled into a sound sleep by Taylor and Megan, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we're about to put a cap on it, finally, as it were.
Yes. So Kimberly walks out into the hallway in a daze, and when Michael spots her, he runs out to barrage her with lies about where he was the night before. She claims to be there on an errand for Peter, even though in the previous episode, she definitely was not still temping at the practice, but sure, and says she will see him later. And then Matt stops Michael to introduce Dr. Dan and brag about how great he's doing in school now, thanks to Dan. And Dan pulls Matt aside to say he's thrilled about Matt's progress, but doesn't do his work for the credit. Matt is just proud, and Michael's a friend. And Dan then gives Matt contact info for the new therapist Dan's sending him to see. Beverly Hollis. Really took seconds to make up that name, huh? Like, not Beverly Hillows, are you sure? Now they can start seeing each other socially, Matt asks, and Dan says they can soon. So Michael comes home that night to see Kimberly on the deck, gazing out contemplatively. And he assumes she's upset about him being out all night and launches back into his excuses. Clip 16.
I'm not doubting your story, Michael. Unless you'd like me to.
What? Well, no, I mean, it's not a story. It's the truth. You do believe me, don't you?
I don't care, all right? I don't care where you were.
You know, I can't take this much longer, Kimberly. Hot, cold, I never know what to expect from you. You hear me? I'm saying I can't take this much longer.
It's all right, Michael. Only 3 months to go. Tops.
Oh, dear. He's not suspicious that she doesn't care. Come on now. The next day, we find Kimberly alone in a church pew, praying aloud to ask God why this is happening to her right now. A priest comes out and offers to listen. He does not get a name on IMDb, so let's call him Father Father. She announces that she has an inoperable tumor and doesn't know how to tell people about it, and tries to leave again, saying he doesn't need to hear her rantings, but to him, they sound like prayers. So she says she's scared of the unknown. She hasn't led a good life, and this may be punishment. And Father Father says that if she believes in God, she'll be forgiven. She doesn't want to make Michael see her differently once he knows she's dying. And Father Father thinks that's unselfish, and she shouldn't give up hope. God is more powerful than any doctor. And then you see her leave, and the church is so dark that as soon as she opens the doors, like, the light shines directly through her skirt. It is so transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Get a lady a slip. My God.
Yeah. P.S. It's the same church that everyone gets married in.
It is.
St. Clair.
St.
Clair of the Valley.
Yes. The one that Matt did not marry, what's his face in it? Alan? Is that his name? God. That was 5,000 episodes ago.
Oh, God.
And then Michael's parking outside a house and spying on Megan through the living room window as she plays the piano. And when he knocks, she tries to close the door on him as soon as she sees him, but he stops her and explains to her panicked question how he found her. He wants an explanation about who she is. He is very attracted to her. I think that's obvious. She counters that he is attracted to a good mystery, and now that it's solved, the fun is over. He'll leave if that's what she really wants, and she says it is. But when he gets to the door, she tells him not to go, and they end up making out again. And the next day, he stalks her some more, following her car to a hotel room, like a bungalow situation. And then he stands by the front window listening as she basically instantly starts making sex noises. And then hears an aggressive male voice and a smack and runs in to intervene as the guy is, like, spanking her. Michael smacks the guy around. Megan pulls Michael off and drags him outside. He still doesn't get it, so she tells him she's a call girl. But no, he should not expect an invoice. It was wonderful while it lasted, but this is what she is. And now that he knows, she doesn't have to worry about him trying to get too close. Oh, boy. She also comes out with her shirt open, by the way. Just, you know. Trying to give her a little bit of a zip doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
At the hospital, Dan finds Matt and announces that he took the afternoon off to hang out with him and stopped to get a paper cup of hospital coffee on his way, I guess. He heard from Matt's new therapist that Matt's doing everything Dan wanted him to. He's impressed that Matt has maintained his positive attitude, which may be what scares him, because in all of Dan's other relationships, his partner has depended more on Dan than vice versa. And Matt
thinks
that
in a relationship now?
Yeah. Have they gone on a date? Like,
have they? I mean, we'd never know if they kissed, but like,
right. Yeah.
This is, whatever. I mean, again, who cares? Like, if this is someone else's off ramp, great. But
yeah. So Matt thinks that in a good relationship, both partners depend on each other. And then because they can't kiss, he reaches his hand out and just lays his palm on Dan's cheek. And it once again looks like he's holding a hand, like, on a stick. It's so strange. We can see the visual aids, obviously. And the next day, Michael's heading out when Kimberly stops him. We think she's about to tell him about her diagnosis, but instead she tentatively says she thinks she's ready to try resuming things sex-wise. So can't he call in and say he'll be late? But he immediately starts putting her off. Maybe she can just turn things on and off, but he can't. And he will call after he's taken the day to warm up to the idea. But where he actually goes after work is to Megan's house, pounding on the door until she lets him in. He can't get her out of his mind. And Megan is apparently a swerf against herself. Clip 17.
Michael, it can't work, okay? I'm a prostitute. It's how I live, how I survive.
I'll deal with that, okay? I've had a lot of practice dealing with women who, shall we say, stray from the norm.
No, you can't just deal with it, Michael, okay? No man can. The image of me in bed with all of those other men sharing me daily, hourly, the thought of it makes your skin crawl. Go ahead, ask me. Okay, I'll ask it for you. What is a girl like me doing in a business like this? A sad story.
No one cares.
Alcoholic father, enabling mother, broken home at 11. I ran away when I was 14. Dad needs a new liver. Mom's got rent on that trailer of hers. God, you'd be blown away at how much all that cost to keep up. It'd have been so much easier if you had just stayed away.
I'm telling you, I can't. Let me stay tonight.
I have a client I'm meeting.
Tomorrow night, then?
Now, you really think we can go on as if it doesn't matter?
I'll be here at 7.
Heart dog, Knowlton Nash, has been letting go of the worst fucking dog fart for the past 20 minutes. And the last one melted my nostril hairs. And I'm in
my
physical
God.
Pain.
That is amazing.
And I want to die.
Dying. I thought you were reacting to the dialogue.
No.
Oh, I knew bad. He wasn't. I knew he wasn't.
Oh, God. So bad.
Well, we're almost done. So, I, you know, kudos
but
to Michael
Knowlton
for
almost done.
No, I don't think so.
Kudos to Michael for being a better feminist than Megan, because this is not how we talk about sex work anymore. All of this Mm-mm. is gross. Sex work is work. Yuck.
Yeah. Also, if your alcoholic father needs a new liver, mm-hmm. his Mickey Mantle ass can go fundraise for it himself, in my opinion.
Yeah, the details, like, mom needs rent for that trailer of hers. Like, all right. Like, this is okay. So every cliche.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Hey, winter's bone.
Yeah. So then we cut outside to see Kimberly watching them hug through the front window and slipping away to hide before Michael comes out again. And as soon as he's gone, Kimberly goes inside. Oh, no. And clip 18.
Oh, my. Oh, you startled me. Startled me, too. To see him here at this house, he hasn't figured it out yet, has he?
No.
Good, because we need to talk.
Yeah, we do.
The electric guitar of They Were in Cahoots.
Which, when you think about it, makes no sense. But at least this, like, perked me up a little bit that I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
But then it was like, oh, wait, it all falls apart. She just found out. So how did she, like, prearrange this sex tourism? Unless she just did that to, like, get him off her back. As it were?
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Without knowing about the diagnosis? Okay.
Right. That it was, but it's so elaborate, like renting a house and then putting like a chair, a candle, and one bed in it. It's like so strange.
Yeah.
Ugh. So we really didn't have to work this hard to seduce Michael. Like, you just didn't. Sorry.
No. Or like, go to the movies and have her come to your house. It's not that difficult.
Right.
Anyway,
let's name our episode MVP.
The Gypsy Kings.
The Gypsy Kings, yes, better than the jeweler who thought he had a nice sale and then he didn't. Mm-hmm.
Taylor, the creep
totally
it up.
The Gypsy Kings. You're right. Least valuable player. I mean, it's truly like a 50-way tie.
It is.
But I'm going to say for the rare time, Amanda, make up your mind about how you feel about this money shit and stop going back and forth. It's very boring.
Yeah, but that's not her fault. So I'm not saying
okay,
her
fair.
Because she can't help how she's written. I'm going to say Megan because at least we finally know what the deal is, sort of. But she is Sabaranga.
She's bad.
Next time and again with this, the race for Wilshire's chief of staff spot turns into a three-way, Craig switches teams, and Michael rejects the breakup. You're going to reject your breakfast when you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. Those are on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. Get your bangs out of your face with a kidsy barrette so that you can see to follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and to visit our Patreon page. There's a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content over there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast that is just for our subscribers at the $5 level and up, and you will find all of that good stuff at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Genuine DiML, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is $40 Gypsy Kings t-shirt, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is something else, isn't he? Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?